Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast contains dramatizations of actual events. Certain situations, dialogue, names, and locations may have been changed. Some scenes are graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Up next, this upscale city prided itself on being safe.
It's a very urban area, has a very low crime rate.
That image is shattered when a young graduate student meets a brutal end.
I think we were just all in disbelief. We were absolutely crushed.
There's only one witness, and she's been wounded.
And all I could think was it was my fault because I forgot my wallet. I couldn't help her.
Security cameras see possible suspects.
The surveillance video camera sees two guys dressed in black. Looks like they have a mask on. And one's short and one's tall.
But it's what someone hears that upends the case.
There was an argument loud enough that this young woman said, "Hey, you gotta come over here and listen to this. There's something going on next door."
Just outside the nation's capital, Bethesda, Maryland is a bedroom community for many people from the U.S. and all over the world who get paid a lot of money to lobby the American government. It's one of the richest cities in the country.
Bethesda is number one, the most highly educated community in the United States, tied with Cambridge, Massachusetts. It is a very upscale, Tony kind of an area, very safe, very wealthy area.
Right in the middle of the downtown shopping district is a Lululemon store, part of a multi-billion dollar international chain that sells upscale yoga and athletic clothing. 30-year-old Jaina Murray, a Texas native and a relatively new arrival to the area, worked there part-time.
She had three master's degrees, and one of the professors at Johns Hopkins said to her, "You know, they have this wonderful corporate model. This might be an interesting topic for a young woman like yourself to write her dissertation about the corporate model that they have there."
Jaina's co-worker on a Friday night in 2011 was 29-year-old Brittany Norwood.
To meet her was to really be impressed by a young woman, you know, attractive, smart, soccer scholarship. Very effervescent, sharp, kind of like an ideal Lululemon employee.
On a cold Saturday morning, a Lululemon co-worker arrived to open the store and found it unlocked. Inside, there were two women lying on the floor and a lot of blood. She rushed out and called 911.
"There's two people. There's a woman that's alive and she's breathing. She's tied up. One person seems dead and the other person is breathing. Oh, my God."
Brittany Norwood was found in the store's bathroom, hurt but alive.
She's laying on the ground. Her hands are bound with plastic ties. She has a significant amount of blood. Her stomach is exposed, and there appear to be, like, cuts, like razor blade cuts or some type of cuts on her belly.
In the back of the store, first responders found Jaina Murray. She'd been dead for hours. It was only at her autopsy that the true extent of Jaina's injuries was discovered.
Jaina's autopsy shows 331 different injuries with six or seven different weapons. I mean, a real concentrated evil attack.
This was a case of rage. You typically are not going to have injuries like that unless the person knows the person that is attacking them.
This was no robbery gone wrong. To have this kind of violence in Bethesda's upscale shopping district was shocking. Even worse, Jaina Murray was about as atypical a murder victim as anyone could imagine.
I really held out hope that it wasn't her. Sorry. I've honestly never talked about it. None of it made sense to me. It didn't add up.
The chief question now was whether Brittany Norwood, the other victim and only witness to this crime, could help investigators find Jaina's killer.
Brittany is at Suburban Hospital, and it sounds like she's in terrible shape. In these opening hours, I don't even know if she's going to survive.
Jaina Murray had lived and studied in many places and made friends across the country.
You know, it's hard to put into words somebody's character who was like Jaina. It's one of those experiences, it's hard to describe being around somebody who was so positive.
News of Jaina Murray's vicious murder shocked the nation's capital and surrounding area.
In the annals of the cases that they've examined in the medical examiner's office in the history of Maryland, I still think they think that this is the case that had more injuries associated with it than any they'd ever seen.
The only good news was that Jaina's co-worker, Brittany Norwood, would survive her injuries and could possibly help the investigation.
She's been through trauma, cut, beat up, and then being in the store all night with her friend who was dead.
From her hospital bed, Brittany was interviewed by detectives.
Brittany said that she and Jaina were closing the store, and she had left her wallet there, so she called Jaina. Jaina had the key to the store. Brittany didn't. You know, Jaina, can you come back?
And she was like, well, I noticed I didn't have my laptop anyway, so it's fine. So I just met her back in front of the store.
Since they were just going to go into the store quickly to get this wallet, they didn't lock the door behind them.
Once inside, Brittany said she realized two men had followed them into the store.
Two men were described as being both dressed all in black, one taller, one shorter. They were masked with eye holes.
And all of a sudden, boom, they attacked both Brittany and Jaina.
He had me by the hair, told me if I said another word, he slit my throat. And Jaina kept yelling and fighting, and he just kept hitting her.
She said one man took Jaina to the back of the store. The other took her to the bathroom. The worst part, Brittany said, was that she could hear the attack on Jaina.
And he was just, like, repeatedly hitting her, and she was just screaming and yelling, and I couldn't do anything, and he wouldn't stop. And the other one was just so focused on where do you keep the money, where do you keep the money. Mm-hmm. It was like, I've never seen so much blood. I couldn't help her.
Luminol showed someone had attempted to clean up a lot of blood.
You couldn't see the blood, but it reacted to luminol spray. The sinks in this establishment literally blew up purple.
Two sets of bloody shoe prints were found in the store.
We had these size 13 shoe prints or whatever they were, big shoe prints, likely belonged to a man.
You could tell there was a big shoe and then there was a smaller shoe, but they also crisscrossed each other and they were on top of each other.
The search was on for the two men described by Brittany Norwood. Investigators hoped security cameras could help, but got a setback.
Now, the fact that there were no security cameras inside that store sort of tells you something about Bethesda and how safe it is.
But a camera from another store caught two men in the area around the time of the attack.
And there at 11:07 p.m. in the back parking lot, clearly shown by the camera, are two men, all dressed in black, one taller, one shorter.
Local beat police said they might know one of these men.
A couple of the officers that worked that area said, well, you know, there's a homeless guy, and he sort of walks around here at night.
He was sort of a known figure in Bethesda, homeless sometimes, and could really, like, become unhinged and, like, yell at people on the street.
His name was Keith Lockett, and he'd just been in a bloody fight.
Things changed dramatically. And all of a sudden, they get a report that Keith Lockett is in a hospital with blood on him.
In the search for who killed Jana Murray and attacked her co-worker Brittany Norwood, a solid suspect emerged in the person of Keith Lockett, a local homeless man with an extensive arrest record.
Keith's been arrested a lot of times, been in and out of homeless shelters.
In what seemed like more than a coincidence, Keith Lockett had been admitted to a local hospital around the same time Jana was murdered.
You know, we knew he was in the area, and when we tracked him down, we saw that he had injuries that could have been received in a fight.
Keith denied any involvement in the murder. He said he got caught up in a fight with another homeless man. But when detectives checked out this story, they got yet another surprise.
Keith's kind of tall, and then they get a report that he's got a shorter friend, and some other witness said that Keith and a short friend were near the store.
Could these be the two men in the security video? It made them solid suspects. DNA samples were taken, and just as quickly as they rose up the suspect list, they were eliminated.
The detectives told me, yeah, he was in a fight, but it wasn't with the two victims, and we were determined that he was not involved in the case.
By now, Jana's car had been located 3 blocks from the store and was being processed for evidence.
It appeared to have some blood in it.
To the shock of investigators, DNA from the blood in Jana's car matched back to their only witness, Brittany Norwood. During their next interview with her, detectives didn't tell her they knew this.
They ask her a pretty innocent question. Have you ever seen Jana's car? Have you ever been in Jana's car?
Do you know what kind of car she has?
I don't. I saw it once, but I don't know the make and model. I don't know.
The blood evidence made it clear Brittany knew more than she was letting on, and even she seemed to suspect her story raised questions.
The next day, she calls and says, I want to come back and talk to you. Okay, come on down. She drives down to the police station. Tell them, I've got to tell you something. I wasn't honest with you before. I have been in her car. They made me move her car. What?
Brittany's story was that the attackers wanted Jana's car moved. According to Brittany, it had been hastily parked in front of the store because Jana thought she'd only be inside for a minute. The attackers thought it might draw undue attention.
They said, where are her keys? I have no idea. One of them punched me in my head and made me look through her coat and her bag for them. When I finally found them, they said if I was to pass to anyone and open my mouth, I can consider myself dead. And that one of them would be watching the entire time.
She said, they told me that they knew where I lived. And if I didn't come back, they were going to hunt me down and kill me.
Detectives now came back to a question that had dogged them from day one.
There was a real stark difference between Jana's injuries and Brittany's injuries. You know, that was something the detectives were asking themselves, like, how did these two guys go crazy on one victim and not really hurt another victim?
The answer to that question started to form after detectives got yet another piece of security video.
The Apple store, directly next door, has a female assistant manager who heard some arguing going on through the wall. They are next door to each other, but at 10 o'clock at night with not a lot of other noise, there was an argument loud enough that this young woman went to the other manager of the store and said, hey, you gotta come over here and listen to this. There's something going on next door. These two women are yelling at each other.
Brittany Norwood's story was that two hooded men attacked her and ultimately killed Jana Murray. But this story took another hit when new security video surfaced. In it, the employees at the shop next door could be seen listening to a loud argument in the Lululemon store about the same time the attack Brittany described took place. The employees told police that the argument was between two women.
Now, what's important about that? Well, we think we're looking for two men, all dressed in black. And by the way, we found them. And they were dishwashers who worked at a Tex-Mex restaurant right next door. They had nothing to do with this case, by the way. So it's beginning to shift.
If two hooded men were never in the store, how to explain the two sets of bloody shoe prints at the scene?
You could see these footprints around inside the store, but they never appeared to leave the store.
Analysts compared the bloody shoe prints to shoes in the store that were used to measure pants if they needed to be hemmed. A pair was found with trace amounts of Jana's blood on the sole.
One set of the inked impressions came from the men's size 14s, which were then cleaned and put back onto the shelf.
And the smaller set of bloody shoe prints came back to shoes Brittany wore the night of Jana's murder. Even more damning, all the murder weapons were matched back to items from inside the store. And subsequent DNA testing confirmed what the crime scene was saying.
Jana's blood was on Brittany's shoes, DNA. Jana's blood was on Brittany's socks. Remember, she is somebody who couldn't help her, couldn't get to her. There was no explanation in her story that would have explained why her shoes and her socks had Jana's DNA blood soaked into them.
The science made sense. Brittany, as a suspect, did not, at least at first.
Brittany was this really likable, vivacious woman. Now, there were this smaller group of people who knew Brittany, who knew a different Brittany.
She went to college on a full ride to play soccer and stayed in college till an incident occurred with her school where she was determined to have been stealing from her teammates and she was discharged from the team. That led her then to leave college, lose her scholarship.
She was later accused of stealing from an ex-boyfriend.
There was a lot of things regarding her background that were not on a police blotter, but, you know, the break-ins at the boyfriend's house, a series of girls that had either worked with her, who found things missing, whether it was cash, perfume, etc.
Stealing seemed a far cry from carrying out a brutal murder, but then detectives learned of a possible motive.
Apparently, this is very common in retail business, where if two people are closing an establishment, each as they leave checks the bag of the others to ensure that nobody's stealing anything.
It appears Jana found stolen items in Brittany's bag. It looks as if she confronted her and told her she'd have to report this theft.
Brittany had gotten in trouble for taking something from another store. So when Jana checked Brittany's bag, she saw that there was something in there that Brittany had not paid for. And Brittany was going to take out.
They argued. It got so loud, it could be heard in a neighboring store. Both women left Lululemon. But prosecutors think Brittany was determined management never find out she'd stolen something. Her solution? She had to kill Jana. So she set up a ruse to get Jana back in the store.
Approximately 20 minutes after they left the store, Jana received a call from Brittany. Hey, I left my pass. I have a prepaid pass for the Metro. That's our train here in Washington, D.C. Can you come back, let me into the store? I need to get my pass to get onto the train.
The evidence shows the first blow was likely delivered from behind.
I think Jana was caught by surprise.
I believe that very early on, her ability to defend herself was compromised with some blows to her head.
What followed was a crime of almost unimaginable violence, all with makeshift weapons from inside the store. To bolster her story of two intruders, Brittany grabbed a pair of large shoes and created shoe prints in the blood. She then did the same thing with her shoes before cleaning and replacing the larger pair. Brittany apparently thought Jana's hastily parked car could expose her, so she moved it 3 blocks away, but didn't realize she'd left telltale blood evidence behind. To make her story work, she also had to simulate an attack. She cut herself, and using zip ties from inside the store, made it appear as if she'd been bound. The last thing Brittany had to do was wait overnight for a co-worker to open the store and then claim she was a victim.
I remember just the horrendous nature of the crime itself, and that anybody would be able to do something like this to Jaina. But it made sense. And we weren't looking for two random people that didn't exist.
The nation's capital was riveted by the trial. Two upscale women in a supposedly safe place, involved in a life-and-death struggle, was simply too much for many to believe. But in November of 2011, a jury deliberated for just 21 minutes before finding Brittany Norwood guilty of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life without parole.
I think that Brittany was brought to justice, but I also believe that if Jaina were here, she believed in second chances. She believed that people are inherently good. And so hopefully she has the opportunity to repent and hopefully make something good out of it for herself and hopefully for people around her.